We have an unusual topic tonight, and one that I hope won't shock you too badly. Our lesson tonight is pray for enemies. Now, we know that we're supposed to pray for our enemies, but we've probably never considered praying for some enemies. But we're going to look at 10 reasons tonight that having enemies could be helpful to us. If we don't have enemies, we should. First of all, because if we're Christians, Christ promised us if they hated Him, they'll hate us also. So if we don't have some enemies out there, then something's wrong. We should be having some enemies. Matthew chapter 5 and verses 43 through 48, Jesus says, you've heard it's been said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. So Jesus tells us that we can never be perfected without having some enemies and learning how to love them. And we're going to look at 10 things that enemies do for us. 10 things that we can't do for ourselves too well. 10 things that friends often don't do for us so well. So 10 reasons we need enemies. We need enemies because they, first of all, force us to make a stand. You know, sometimes your friends will go along with you wherever you go, however you go, and whatever you say or do, and they just kind of go along and don't really push you too hard because they want to be your friend. But enemies aren't too interested in that. Enemies don't care whether you like them or not. That's one of the things that makes them enemies. And so because of that, they force us to make a stand sometimes. Sometimes when we're not really ready to or don't really want to. In Acts chapter 5 and verses 27 through 30, the apostles had some enemies that forced them to make a stand. They had brought them and set them before the council, and the high priest said, didn't we command you that you should not teach in this name? And behold, you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. You see, he forces Peter and the other apostles now to make a choice, to decide what are they going to do, which side are they going to take. Peter could have said, we're sorry, we won't do it anymore. The apostles could have said, you know, you're right, I don't know what we were thinking, you did tell us not to do that, and it must have been quite an accident that we did it again the second time, but we won't ever do it again. They could have done that. But these enemies forced them to make a choice and take a stand one way or another. Instead, though, verse 29 tells us that Peter and the apostles answered, we ought to obey God rather than men. The God of our fathers raised up Jesus, whom you slew and hung on a tree. They made it clear, we're not going to back down. We are choosing sides here. A lot of the problem that we have as Christians, calling ourselves Christians when we're really trying to straddle the fence, try to keep one foot in the world and one foot in God's camp, and it doesn't work. But those enemies are going to force us to make a stand. And either we're going to stand with them, or we're going to stand with God. Sometimes others who are either indifferent to us or even friends Friends will overlook those qualms that we have about making a decision many times. They just kind of let it go and say, well, you know, that's just a weakness they have. They'll get better. But the enemy is going to make you make the choice. When persecution comes, when difficulty comes, when there's truly an enemy, then those who are going to stand for God are going to have to stand. And those who are going to choose to switch sides and stand with the world are going to go stand with the world. And you see it throughout church history. Throughout the first century, there were those, Jesus said, that there were going to be fathers who would turn against their sons, and mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law would turn against each other. And a man's enemies would be those of his own household, because when the tough times came, some were going to pick the wrong side. But it's up to us to make the right choice when those enemies force us to make a stand. But secondly, we need enemies because they force us to grow stronger. It's Sunday, so I'm sure that somewhere here in these United States there are some football games going on. At least one, right? Somewhere there's one. Well, when we think about those muscular football players, what do they do to get strong? Do they lay around all week resting up so they'll be ready for the game? I have a feeling they wouldn't be ready for the game if they did that. Quite the opposite. They work hard. They pretend to be enemies to each other, don't they? And they play against each other. They call those scrimmages. But they do that in their practice. They lift weights. They run. They work hard. Do you realize that if it were not for each and every muscle that you have, with the exception of the tongue, every other muscle you have has an opposite? Your body wouldn't work otherwise. When you lift your arm up like this, if there weren't another muscle to pull it back down, it would just stay like that forever. You'd never be able to do it. If it wasn't for the opposite leg, you've got one on top and one on bottom. One pulls it this way, the other one pulls it back the other way. Those opposites work each other. And that's what a person does when they're exercising, when they're working out. They're working each of those muscles so that they each get stronger. But one has to work against the other for that to happen. If one of those football teams that's playing today, those professional teams, were to practice all year by playing against junior high teams, do you suppose they'd be ready to face another professional team when the time came? No, they wouldn't be ready. God knows and has always known that it's adversity, trials, tribulation. It's the enemies out there that we have to work against that make us stronger. That's what gives us our strength. 2 Corinthians 1, verses 8 through 11, Paul talks about a time in Asia. Maybe this was Thessalonica. Maybe this was Lystra and Derbe. I'm not sure exactly where he was at the time that he's referring to. He just says a time in Asia. It was a time that came on in such trouble, he says, that they were pressed out of measure, above strength. In other words, they were pushed so hard they didn't think they could make it any further. They thought it was more than they could handle. Have you ever been there? If you've ever been, and sometimes we're that way physically, we've just pushed and pushed until our muscles are worn out, our body's worn out, and we can't move any further. Sometimes we're that way spiritually and emotionally. We've gone as far as we can go. We're stressed out. We've given all we can give, and emotionally we just can't give a bit more. Or spiritually, we've given all we can give and there's nothing left and we feel like we're at the point where we're going to have to give up. We get to those points. And the question we have to say is, when we get to that point, what keeps us going? When our strength is gone, you know, I dare say most of us are stronger than we were at some other point in our life. Now I know as we get older, we get to a point where we start getting weaker again. But if you were able on your own two legs to walk in here tonight, you're stronger than you were at 5 months. Because 5 month old babies can't lift themselves up and walk on their little legs. They're not strong enough yet. But what makes them stronger? Well, they keep using those legs. And they get stronger and stronger. Before long, they're running around and you wish they couldn't. They're getting into everything and they're climbing on everything and getting into things that you didn't think ever imagined they could reach or do. Well, the same thing should happen with us spiritually. We need to be getting stronger. And the good thing about it is, from a spiritual standpoint, unlike the physical, where I guess they say we peak around 20, and then we start getting weaker again. I know I can feel it when I get out there with those teenagers. I know I'm past the peak physically. But when we talk about our spiritual strength, it can continue to increase and increase and increase, and there's no limit to how strong we can become spiritually, even though physically we're wearing away. But in 2 Corinthians 1:8-11, Paul talks about being pressed out of measure above strength, in so much, he says, that we despaired even of life. Have you ever been in a situation where you thought you were going to die? I don't think I've ever been in a situation physically where I thought my death was near. But those who have ever been, I thought I was going to die, that's quite a feeling. Paul experienced that. He was pressed so hard he just thought he was going to die. Do you remember him being stoned? They thought he was dead. They left him for dead. But he didn't die. But he was stronger because of that. He wasn't afraid of that. You know, once, you ever remember the first time you did something and you were just scared to death to do it? And it may have been, you know, when you went to the doctor and had to get a shot. It may have been the first time, you know, you broke something. May have been the first time you had a kidney stone, or first time you gave birth. For those of you ladies, you were dreading it, and you thought you didn't think you'd ever make it through. Well, if you ever had that same experience a second time, you thought, you know what? I think I can handle it. This, I've been there, I've done that, and I made it through. And you were stronger. Stronger, at least in your determination to be able to accomplish the task. Because you'd accomplished it once already. For some, getting up to give a speech. The first time, I could never do that. But it gets easier. The more you do something, the easier it gets. But we need to understand that it's exercising ourselves spiritually, mentally, emotionally, the exercising strengthens us in those ways, just like the physical exercise strengthens the physical body. It works the same way. But we've got to have that opponent. That's what forces us to grow stronger. You know, with a friend sometimes, you and the friend are working together and you say, I'm tired. How about, I'm tired too. Let's quit. But you see, we've got an enemy who doesn't know the meaning of the word quit. So when we're tired and we say, if it was a friend, we'd say, well, let's just quit. The enemy says, I hope you quit because then I'll get you because I'm not going to quit. I'll keep going. He pushes us further than we would ever go alone. Keeps us from being lazy. keeps us from sitting back and resting on our laurels and thinking, oh, I've done enough. Keeps pushing us. The third reason we need enemies is because they give us a chance to show that we are God's children. In the passage in Matthew 5 that we read at the beginning, and also in Luke 6, 35 and 36, love your enemies and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest, for He is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be therefore merciful as your Father also is merciful. Romans 12, 20 and 21 talks about if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. Jesus there in the passage in Matthew 5 points out to us that if we just love those who love us, we're just like everybody else. The thing that sets God's children apart from the world, the thing that shows that we're really different from everybody else, is the fact that we don't just love our friends. We love our enemies. And if we don't love our enemies, then maybe we are just like everybody else. Maybe we're not really God's children at all. You see, having enemies allows us to show by our love for them that we're God's children and that we are different from everyone else. We couldn't do that without an enemy. The fourth thing, we need enemies because they keep insignificant things from distracting us. They help keep us focused, don't they? 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 through 9. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about, seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Does knowing that the devil's out there cause you to want to worry about little insignificant things? Or does it cause you to want to put the little insignificant things out of your mind so you can focus on what's really important? I dare say that if we truly believe He's out there, if we have seen Him at work, if we have seen Him devour someone else, and most of us have seen that occur, we've seen how the devil destroys somebody's life. Somebody who perhaps we thought was a faithful Christian. And we've seen the way the devil gets in there and just tears them apart, limb from limb, until there's nothing left of them. If we really believe the devil's out there, we're going to be watchful. We're not going to worry about the insignificant things. Can you imagine a soldier in battle? He's there on the battlefield, and he knows and he sees the enemies over there across the way. And that soldier, knowing the enemy's right over there, do you think he's going to be concerned about whether his watch matches his shoes? Do you suppose he's going to be concerned if he gets a little bit of mud on his uniform? Oh, those things are insignificant. There's an enemy over there that wants to kill him. What he's going to be concerned about is, do I have some bullets in my gun? Those are the kinds of things he's going to be concerned about. Am I ready to face that enemy? That's what's important. You know, sometimes with some of the petty things that we seem to be concerned about in our lives, I wonder if we really know that we have an enemy over there trying to kill us. And not just kill us physically, but destroy us spiritually for all eternity. Do we really believe it? Because I don't think we would be distracted by all of the nonsensical things that we get distracted by in the church sometimes if we really believed that He was out there. Next, we need enemies because they keep us from fighting each other. You know, once you know whose side you're on, and you know who the enemy is, and you're putting all of your effort and energy into fighting the enemy, you don't have time or energy for fighting each other on the same side. And again, I wonder sometimes when I see the things that are written in some of our brotherhood papers, and they're biting at each other and condemning each other and arguing with each other about every little thing. And I wonder, why don't you put some of that energy into fighting the devil instead? What's wrong with us when we spend more time at each other's throat and none fighting against Satan and his forces? In Galatians 5:15-17, Paul warns us about this. He says, "But if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another." And you know, I have seen some churches that did just exactly that. They ate each other up. The devil didn't have to come devour them. They ate each other up. And pretty soon, there was nothing left and there wasn't a church there anymore. Well, who wins when that happens? God certainly doesn't win when that happens. The devil wins when we do his work for him. We devour each other. He doesn't have to devour us. Whose side are we on when we do that? Verse 16, he says, "This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary the one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would." He tells us, you know, we've all got that battle going on inside us. Each individually, the Spirit versus the flesh. And the church has that battle going on, the Spirit versus the flesh. But he tells us, we need to be walking by the Spirit. When the flesh raises its ugly head, that's the devil in our midst. And we need to stamp that out. Fight the devil. If we're fighting against each other, some of us are on the wrong side. Because we're all supposed to be on God's side. You ever see that happen in a game of some kind? Well, I've seen a team, they'll get so mad, they're biting, fussing and fighting at each other, and the other team just runs all over them when that happens. One team is unified and working together, and the other one is at each other's throat and putting each other down and saying bad things to each other about this and that and everything else. It doesn't turn out too well for them when they do that. We have to encourage each other and work together as a team, as an army of the Lord, fighting the devil. Number six, we need enemies because they remind us of our mission. Remember the church in the first century? Great day on the day of Pentecost. 3,000 were added to their number. Wow. A few chapters later, the number has grown to 5,000. I'm not sure actually the way that reads, whether it's grown by 5,000 or grown to 5,000. But either way, you know, either up to 5,000 or up to 8,000. But wow! Some estimates say that there, by the end of chapter 7, that the church in Jerusalem had gotten up to about 10,000 people. Or some estimates even say 15,000. The church was growing. And it was doing great in Jerusalem. But guess what? Jerusalem was the only place in the world it was. And what did Jesus tell his disciples before he left? Go into all the world. He didn't say just set up the church in Jerusalem and let everybody come there. He said, you go into the world. So here we come to the end of chapter 7, and Stephen has now been stoned to death. In verse 59, Stephen was calling upon God and saying, "Lord Jesus, receive my spirit." And he kneeled down and cried with a loud voice, "Lord, lay not this sin to their charge." And when he said this, he fell asleep. Chapter 8, then verse 1, "And Saul was consenting unto his death. And at that time there was a great persecution against the church which was at Jerusalem, and they were all scattered abroad throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles." God's plan was for them to spread out. They weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. And I can understand why. I mean, can you imagine a city that's filled with other Christians? And great things are happening there. Who would want to leave that? Who would want to leave a situation where in one city there were 5 to 10 or 15,000 fellow Christians and go out there into the world to another town where there aren't any? But that's what they were supposed to go do. And so Saul, the enemy of the church, rose up and reminded them of their mission. He reminded them that they needed to get out of Jerusalem. And so they got out. And verse 4 tells us then that they that were scattered abroad went everywhere preaching the word. They got back to doing what they were supposed to do. It's easy for us to become complacent, to become comfortable, to be happy with the status quo. But that's not our mission. Our mission is to get out there. You know, can you imagine? We're talking about a battle here and enemies. Can you imagine how you're out there on the battlefield and you're fighting and you come, you get worn out and you're injured maybe, and they bring you back and you're surrounded by friends again. I know those who in our current war with in Afghanistan and Iraq and what's going on over there, and some have come back from a tour of duty and then they had to go a second time, and you know they didn't want to go. They got back. They wanted to stay, of course, but they knew they had a duty and a responsibility to get back out there. It's great for us to come together like we have today and worship God and to study His Word and to be together with fellow Christians. And sometimes we might say, "Oh, wish it could be that way all the time. Every day we could get together and do it and just be together." But then we're not fulfilling our mission. We've got to get back out there in the world. I think that kind of thinking was the kind of thing that established monasteries in the Dark Ages. Oh, well, wouldn't it be great if we could just get a cloister together and just stick together and not let the evil of the world in? But they forget that's not what God set up for us to be or to do. And so we've got to get back out there. And sometimes it takes enemies to remind us of our mission and force us to go and do and to get out there and face the dangers. The seventh thing we need enemies for is because they keep us humble. Oh, have you ever got to thinking too highly of yourself? Boy, those enemies will bring you back down in a hurry, won't they? I was listening to a lesson by Tom Holland, and he was talking about how he has a little file of some anonymous letters that he got from some 50 years ago when he started preaching. And he said, I keep those. He said, if I ever get to thinking too highly of myself, I can just pull one of those letters out, and it'll cut me right back down to size. Just one of them. But sometimes we need an enemy to keep us humble. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 through 9. Paul says, "And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations that were given, that was given to me, a thorn in the flesh." You know, Paul would have been tempted. I mean, here's a fellow who wrote half of the books of the New Testament. I mean, that's a pretty... He could have easily gotten pretty haughty about that, couldn't he? And then, well, who do you think you are? I'm the Apostle Paul, and I wrote half of the books in there. He says, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. And he even prayed to the Lord 3 times to remove it, and the Lord said, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made greater in your weakness. And so Paul recognized then that he didn't need to be haughty. He didn't need to be exalted above measure. Sometimes I think there are those today who think they envy Paul. Well, I wish I could have been like Paul. That's because they never saw all the suffering that Paul had to do. They're only seeing the imminent status of one who was respected for writing so much of the New Testament. They didn't see the way his enemies dogged his every footstep and followed him from town to town trying to disrupt him and destroy him. Some of those folks would quickly change their mind if they ever had to spend 1 week in his foot, in his shoes, in his footsteps. The eighth thing is that we need enemies because they remind us of God's love for us. You say, enemies? Remind us of God's love? No, enemies don't love. No, they don't. Well, but they do remind us of how much God loved us. Romans 5, 6 through 10, for when we were yet without strength in due time, Christ died for the ungodly. Scarcely for a righteous man will one die. Yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commends His love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, being now justified by His blood, we shall be saved from wrath through Him. For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of His Son, much more being reconciled, we shall be saved by His life. God loved us enough to treat us that way when we were His enemies. And when we think about how our enemies make us feel, then it needs to remind us of how we must have been making God feel. And yet He overcame that, and He did what was best for us anyway. So the next time your enemy has you in stomach tied in a knot and you want to kill, remember, that's what I was doing to God. But instead, He sent His Son to die for me.